You're listening to Thinking Outside the Bud, where we speak with entrepreneurs, investors, thought leaders, researchers, advocates, and policymakers who are finding new and exciting ways for cannabis to positively impact business, society, and culture. And now, here is your host, business coach, Bruce Eckfeldt.
Are you a CEO looking to scale your company faster and easier? Check out Thrive Roundtable. Thrive combines a moderated peer group mastermind, expert one-on-one coaching, access to proven growth tools, and a 24/7 support community. Created by Inc. award-winning CEO and certified scaling up business coach Bruce Eckfeldt, Thrive will help you grow your business more quickly and with less drama. For details on the program, visit eckfeldt.com/thrive. That's eckfeldt.com/thrive.
Welcome, everyone. This is Thinking Outside the Bud. I'm Bruce Eckfeldt. I'm your host. And our guest today is Liz Kost. She is co-founder and CEO of Fog and Tree. We're going to talk to her about the work that they're doing in the cannabis space, really looking at the botanical side of things and understanding how to really bring in kind of infusions, aromatherapy. You know, cannabis is this wonderful plant that has all these different kind of components and terpenes and capabilities. And I'm always fascinated to talk with people who are kind of looking beyond just the THC aspect of cannabis about what else can you do, because it really is a multifaceted, very powerful plant. So excited for the conversation. With that, welcome to the program, Liz.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me. Super excited.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. So let's do a little background first before we kind of get into the work that you're doing today. You know, professionally, what were you doing? How did you get into cannabis? Tell us a little bit about the backstory.
Sure. So my career started in the alcohol industry. I worked for Beam Suntory for a number of years and then moved to a wine company in Northern California. And 2015, cannabis was really starting to become an industry. And so my co-founder and I decided it was time to start a design studio. He's a friend of mine, I've known him for many, many years. So both designers by trade, we started a design studio that specialized in cannabis branding and packaging design. And we ran that studio from 2015 to 2018 when the Hemp Farm Bill Act was signed. And we thought, wow, you know, we launched well over 100 cannabis brands in the space. And we had started off in the illicit market. So we had sort of lived through legalization, which was painful, but having come from a regulated space from branding and marketing in the alcohol industry, it was pretty easy for me to sort of navigate those challenges, you know, having to design in a regulated area. So switched over to cannabis in 2015, we're designing through, you know, black market through legalization, launched our own brand in 2018 called Fog and Tree. And it's because Humboldt County is known for its fog and big ass trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we got our name. Paying, you know, tribute to Northern California and where we were located at the time and the cannabis culture at that time, you know, Murder Mountain and the Emerald Triangle and all that kind of stuff. So, and we wanted to create a brand that we could sell broad market, but we didn't just want to be a CBD brand. You know, we sort of saw on the horizon how that could quickly become saturated. And we knew, being traditional, you know, branders and marketers, that we needed a little bit more meat to our brand in order to be able to differentiate from the mass. So clients of ours had given us a little vial of cannabis terpenes, and we were actually smoking pot one day and, you know, being in the industry, and smelled the terpenes. And I said, gosh, you know, why isn't anybody doing anything with these? Right. I mean, they just, the smell, it's so magical.
Yeah.
And it's very potent. So started to do a lot of research around terpenes and found that they are legal throughout the whole United States. And and they do have aromatherapy benefits, you know, with there's linalool and myrcene and limonene, and all of those terpenes have different benefits, you know, olfactory benefits. So we created a fragrance. We created a cannabis fragrance using cannabis terpenes. And that was our first product we launched in December of 2018 on the Touch of Modern platform. And we sold 133 bottles in about 5 days. So we said, this has a little bit of legs. Mm-hmm. And from there, we produced more products. We've grown our direct-to-consumer channel. We participated in an accelerator through Canopy Boulder. Yeah, so it's been quite the journey with Fog and Tree.
Oh, I can imagine. I'm curious. So on one hand, you had the experience of launching, 100 brands in cannabis already, but I'm wondering how that prepared you for launching your own brand and then maybe what you, didn't quite realize or what you learned actually having to do it yourself. What were the kind of the things that were different about doing it yourself versus having done it for other people?
Sure. So, when you do it for other people, it's really easy to sort of find the holes and see what they're doing wrong, right? And mm-hmm. and we would see things like poor cash flow management in an industry where cash isn't necessarily readily available. Or we would see SKU proliferation. People would just want to pump out SKU after SKU after SKU. And what happens is it weighs really heavily on your business when you're having to sink a lot of your money into that inventory, right? So we saw a lot of mistakes, and I said to my co-founder, look, we're running a successful business now. I think that we can do this on our own and do it better than, what most of our clients are doing. So, we were super cocky. And and since then, have been met with a number of challenges, including a pandemic and a recession, which, and sort of the dying world of retail. So it's been interesting. It's been a big learning curve. We've had to pivot to a lot of direct-to-consumer marketing right now because a lot of the retailers aren't really open. So I've learned a ton about, digital marketing, filling your funnel when it comes to marketing to consumers. How do you get those conversions? What are the different touch points? How many touch points you have to have? What's your consumer lifetime value? I mean, all of this stuff you sort of learn in the digital marketing world. And I think at the end of the day, it's a blessing because it's really just going to strengthen our brand for the long haul. So,
yeah. And let's talk about the brand. What was your process? What were your decisions? What's your target, kind of customer, target client in the work that you're doing right now? Tell us a little about that strategy, how you've developed it.
Sure. So, we had originally launched and we had a very clear vision of who our consumers would be. We are definitely looking at people in the millennial age group. They represent 30% of the population, and they have a collective spending power of about $1.4 trillion. Did a lot of research on millennials. They are the most frequent users of fragrance in the U.S. by age group, and they are also the most frequent users of recreational cannabis in the U.S. by age group. So we knew that there would be lower barrier to entry there and less education required for that consumer. So, after identifying our consumer, we sort of knew we weren't fragrance experts, right? Like we're branding and marketing experts, not necessarily fragrance experts. So we have signed on a strategic advisor. Her name is Mindy Yang. She's the CEO for The Perfumery in New York, which is, it's a fragrance incubator and a fragrance experience studio, if you will. And she's also the co-founder for the Indie Fragrance Guild. So she's been doing a lot of work with us to sort of hone our messaging and, help with fragrance marketing. And we also have on our board of advisors, our fragrance supplier, our material supplier, which is they specialize in natural fragrance. So our products are 100% all natural, which again resonates with that millennial consumer. They want clean products. They want transparent labeling, sustainability. So we have a big sustainability mission with our products where everything is, we use compostable sampling bags, we use wood tops that have been sustainably harvested, and then we also have a give back. We donate a portion of our proceeds to the Wildfire Relief Fund that helps the victims of California wildfires and the families of those victims because, having lived in Northern California, seeing the devastating wildfires, it's really rough. So, we're blessed to be able to give back to that cause. So.
Yeah, I've had to be out in California a couple of times. I've seen the fires firsthand. It's really devastating for many of those communities.
And the communities, right? The farms, yeah. The people who live yeah. there, you know, people who have had homes for many years that have now been relocated. So, I mean, I think at one point an entire Paradise Ridge was wiped out, the whole yeah. community. It's so, we try to do our part. But,
oh, I'm sure.
That's good work.
And tell me, so, I mean, these are natural oils that you're extracting them from hemp plants, from marijuana plants. What's your source? What's your processing look like?
Sure. So we get our cannabis terpenes from an accredited genetics company out of Humboldt County, California, that used to be a client of ours back in the design days. And they have to be hemp terpenes because okay. that's what makes it federally legal. Unfortunately, even though terpene compounds themselves are legal, if we extract them from a federally illegal plant, it...
Oh, interesting. So even if there's no THC in it, if it's extracted from a marijuana plant, that it's illegal.
Correct.
Got it.
So it has to be extracted from hemp plant. They grow full sun, organic hemp and marijuana plants. But, you know, legally they have all their permits and they use a steam distillation process to harvest the hemp terpenes.
Okay.
So they don't use any chemical extraction. It's all extracted through steam.
Got it.
Yeah.
And given that these are botanicals and, you know, are kind of coming from living plants, how do you deal with the whole kind of shelf life, you know, keeping them fresh, you know, or fully potent over time? I mean, I know a lot of the terpenes degradate or, you know, have shelf lives and, you know, are affected by temperature and exposure and things like that. How do you make sure that the end product is going to be, you know, of the highest quality possible?
Sure. I don't think that, you know, degradation is our largest issue because our fragrances aren't solely made out of cannabis terpenes. I mean, that would be, first of all, very expensive. Cannabis yeah. terpenes are about $6,000 for a 1 ounce bottle. you know, so we don't use enough in our product that it would cause it, you know, to be unstable. But the tricky thing about terpenes is the fact that you have to harvest them in very specific ways in order to create a consistent scent profile. So they have to be grown, the plants have to be grown in the same soil for every harvest, meaning the same fertilizer, same soil conditions, right? And then the terpenes have to be extracted at the same life cycle of the plant every time because terpene profiles change in a plant throughout yeah. its life cycle. You know, obviously terpenes are meant to deter predators and attract pollinators. And depending on the stage of the plant, it's doing those things, you know, at different times. So the company we use, the terpene company, they've sort of nailed that science down and they've gotten really good at knowing sort of when to harvest and how to grow the plants to get a consistent scent profile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from a kind of product portfolio point of view, like how do you see this playing out? Do you have other kind of formulations or profiles that you're going to develop over time? Is this, you know, I guess is product strategy around, you know, creating the kind of aromatherapy product, or is this other uses of terpenes? I mean, how do you see these kind of your product strategy playing out over time?
Sure. So we are, you know, beyond just putting cannabis terpenes into a fragrance, we do have a brand strategy, right? So all of our fragrances are meant to be experiential and they transport you to a time and space in California. So our initial scent we call Redwood Coast, and that transports you to like a mystic redwood forest in Northern California. So it has really musky, herbaceous, sort of woodsy smell with, we call it fresh coastal fog, heart notes. And then it just has hemp as a top note. So it's woodsy, it's spicy, it's very mystical, right?
Yeah.
Our second scent, which we just released last month, is called Valley Bloom. Valley Bloom pays tribute to like a super bloom in the Central Valley area, specifically San Luis Obispo, which is still very coastal, but they have a lot of like citrus groves. And so we imagined, you know, taking a road trip in California and rolling down your window in the Central Coast, and you smell a little bit of the sea, but you also smell citrus, eucalyptus, roses, which tend to be grown along citrus plants. So it has more of those floral notes. And then for the new year, we just released a new product called Smudge, which is a smokeless smudge spray. So you know what smudging is, right?
No.
Okay.
Educate us, yeah.
So smudging is, you know, when you get those sage bundles and you burn them.
To
cleanse space of negative energy, right?
Yep.
So our smudge spray is a smokeless smudge spray, and it uses all the same botanicals. Yeah, all the same botanicals you would in a smudge. So it has the sage, lavender. We put a little bit of bergamot in there, and then it has cedar, as well as our cannabis terpenes. So our whole campaign is sort of to spray 2020 away.
Now, do you guarantee that it has the same negative energy removable effect as burning real sage?
No, it's the aromatics, right? So it's all about using those terpenes, you know, because it's not just cannabis, right? It's cedar and sage and all those other aromatherapy benefits that help to cleanse your space of negative energies. So so we just released Smudge, and it should be a good product for us. And we'll probably do a couple more fragrances next year. I'd like to do one that's a tribute more to Southern California, you know, maybe some more desert smells.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. That'll probably be on the docket for next year. So
I love it. And how do you envision, you know, folks using these scents? I mean, is this a special occasion? Is this every day? What's the use case?
You know, millennials are the most frequent users of fragrance, but they're also using fragrance in formats that are untraditional to sort of what you remember fragrance to be, right? Mm-hmm. Like it used to be your mom would buy your dad a bottle of cologne every Christmas, and that bottle would sort of last him through the year, and he'd spray it on himself for special occasions.
Yeah.
With millennials, what we're finding is they aren't using the sprays as much, right? Mm-hmm. They like the rollerball travel size formats that they can take with them. They like smaller sizes, so they can experiment with layering or all kinds of different fragrances. They like to experiment. And they also use household fragrance a lot more. So candles, room sprays, room diffusers. Those are all really a huge growing category, especially right now with everybody working from home, and you know, they might be sitting next to their cat litter box or something, right? And so they want to be able to have a nice smelling space, right, with more virtual working.
It's interesting. My wife is a millennial, and we've been working at home now for a couple of months, and that's exactly what happened. You know, all of a sudden I was like, oh, what's that smell? And I would go into the other room, and there'd be a candle burning, and I was like, this is kind of nice. I should have done this years ago.
Exactly. You start to find candles popping up in all your different rooms, right? So
Interesting.
And how, I mean, I you're taking a really interesting kind of angle to the cannabis industry, you know, in terms of, you know, not this non-THC approach to things. I mean, how do you see sort of the I guess I'll call it the THC market, you know, kind of the spread of cannabis in the medical and adult use impacting you? Is this making kind of cannabis more appealing? Is this completely independent? I mean, how do you relate, or how do you feel you relate to the cannabis industry overall?
So, you know, the other thing we thought of when we were trying to develop a product is we wanted to create something that everyone could share in the cannabis experience, right? Even if you live in like Arkansas. Right, which is so far from cannabis legalization, but you're young and you want to participate in the movement, and you don't necessarily want to get high, but you want to own something that's cannabis, right?
Yeah.
To say, look at me, I'm participating. So I feel like our products are introducing consumers to cannabis in ways that don't include ingesting or smoking, and it's something that they can feel cool and feel like they're really able to participate in the movement. So as cannabis becomes more popular, and you know, they just legalized like 4 more states.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so here's hoping eventually we'll be able to bank one day. you know, even that's difficult. But I think that right now it's very segmented into, like, you have your THC products that get you high. They are illegal in some markets. you have your CBD products, they don't get you high, and that's it. Like, those are your segments, which is weird because there's a, you know, compounds in the cannabis plant. We've sort of isolated these two and created these two different markets out of it. So once legalization occurs, I think there's going to be it's going to become decentralized, right? And you're not going to have the CBD market and the THC market anymore. You're just going to have the cannabis market. And you're going to see a lot of these other cannabinoids coming into play, like CBG and CBN and, you know, THCA and THCV and, you know, all these other sort of compounds and terpenes, right? All these compounds that are supposed to work synergistically that were isolating, right? So it's definitely going to grow. I mean, the cannabis-infused beauty space in 2016 was worth about, I think it was $5 billion. And by 2026, they estimate that the cannabis-infused beauty market is going to grow to be $18 billion market. So it's going to be pretty big. And I think that there's a lot of research that we still haven't done, right? I mean, it's been illegal. So universities and different researchers haven't been able to get their hands on material to even study. So I think a lot of research is going to come out about terpenes and cannabinoids. I mean, they were even testing it with COVID. They found that when they combine CBD with terpenes and the two acted synergistically together, that they reduced inflammation in COVID patients 3 times greater than using steroids. So, I mean, it's fascinating, right? There's so many things we don't know about this plant. So, you know, we're super excited to be in the space. And I think that the more terpene research we have, it's just going to help strengthen our products. And yeah, it's an exciting world for sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, you mentioned the issue with banking. I mean, I guess what else has come up given that, I mean, I guess how have you been impacted by sort of the cannabis issues around banking and taxes and things like that? Like, where do you fall given that you are focusing on hemp, but, you know, there's still drama around that? What's actually come up for the business?
Well, I mean, we've had everything come up, but when we owned our design studio, we had our bank account shut down. And they didn't just shut down our bank account, they shut down our personal accounts and our personal credit cards as well, because we were helping cannabis manufacturers put their product into regulation packaging. You know, it's so bizarre, but we were aiding and abetting, right? So we've had our bank account shut down. We've had our credit card processor shut down. We've had to get high risk credit card processing, which we now have. Even being a hemp company, you're required to get high risk credit card processing. And you can't get a business loan, so you have to do a lot of fundraising and a lot of cash flow management because you don't want to run out of that cash, right? So it's made us better at cash flow management.
Well, sure.
And it's made us respect that money a little bit more, knowing that, you know, we can't necessarily just go to a bank and get more. Right. Okay. So, yeah, I always say that the best business people when it comes to cash flow management come out of the cannabis space.
Yeah, no, because it's lifeblood.
I mean,
you can't function without it.
Yeah. And we have to do a lot of fundraising, you know, which is never fun and always a challenge, you know, particularly being a female in the space and considering that, you know, they got like 3% of the global investment capital in 2018. Yeah. I mean, it's just silly. So.
And why? I mean, I'm just kind of curious. Like, what have you seen? Like, how does that play out? Is it access to getting the meetings? Is it not taken seriously by, you know, the people who have the money? How does this? You know, what are the dynamics that you've seen in the capital circles?
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of different experiences. I have, you know, gone to sort of fundraising events, and it's all men. You know, so I'm definitely the minority, and a lot of them, it's more of a paternal discrimination. It's almost like looking at me and I've had the comments of like, this is your company? How old are you? You know, you're so young. But you get those types of comments where it's almost like they view you as their daughter, right? So it's difficult to instill that sort of trust that you're not going to go spend all of their money. So I've run up against that. But the biggest thing that I've found is that women and men just talk differently.
Yeah.
They do. You know, men are, they want very concise 3-word answers, right? Like, what's your distribution strategy? Boom. You know, how are you going to make money, right? Like, it's very straightforward, to the point questions. And if you spend too much time answering it, you get it wrong, right?
Undermines their confidence, yeah.
Exactly. You just have to be really, really, really short, right? Whereas women talk very differently, right? When you talk to a female investor, when it's a woman to woman, we do a lot of this, right? We do a lot of talking and getting to know each other. Can I trust you? Can I not trust you? You know, it's more relationship-based. Mm-hmm. As opposed to fact-based. So it's having to learn how to shift that tone and what to say and how to answer questions. That takes a lot of training, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard, so.
Yeah, you know, hopefully we sort of equalize the ratios here and we get more women founders and more women investors. How do you think that's going to change the industry, you know, in general, but within cannabis specifically?
You know, cannabis, one of the many reasons why I went into the cannabis space is I saw a lot of opportunity for women, right? And
yeah.
It's really promising. Like, a lot of our clients from the design days, the women were the CEOs and the husbands were the farmers, right? And it's because they were family businesses. So you had these families who were farming for many generations, illicitly, raising children in that environment and living in these rural areas, right? And then legalization hit and these farmers were expected to be businesses, right? So you had the moms being put into these CEO positions because they've always run the household. They've always sort of taken care of the children and paid the bills and run the house, whereas the men were the farmers. So it was really promising in the beginning. I saw a ton of female leaders, a ton of female CEOs, a ton of women creating brands. And now it's sort of distilled out. You know, now that more and more capital has come into play, you get a lot more investment bankers who are taking over these companies, and the women are sort of being phased out again. And that's really discouraging. But at the same time, it motivates me to continue my journey, to be able to say, I'm not going to get phased out. I'm going to stay strong. I'm going to be a female leader in the future, right?
Yeah.
Because that's my goal. But yeah, it's, you know, it's an ever-changing landscape. And I wish that there were more diversity just overall, but,
yeah.
You know, it's what it is.
Yeah, so. Well, work to be done.
Yeah.
Work to be done.
There's a lot more work to be done, for sure. But
Liz, this has been a pleasure. If people want to learn more about you, about the products, the work that you're doing, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, you can go to our website, fogandtree.com. We are doing a crowdfunding raise right now through MicroVentures. So I have an invest tab on my website that you can click on and learn more about our campaign if you're interested in supporting really innovative cannabis brand that's had great traction, by the way. We didn't mention that our products are in Fred Segal, they're in Saks Salon, we're on the Grommet, which is owned by Ace Hardware. We just added 7 new retailers last quarter. So, I mean, we're killing it with the, you know, getting into retail and direct-to-consumer sales is growing. It's been great. So go to our website, click on the invest tab. If you're interested in investing, you can also reach me direct at liz@fogandtree.com. If you're interested in collaborating, we're always looking to do that. Yeah, that's
perfect.
Where you'll find us.
I'll make sure that the links and information is in the show notes so people can click through that information.
Perfect. And if people sign up for our newsletter, they'll get 35% off their first order so they can try Fog and Tree products for themselves if you want to know what a cannabis fragrance smells like.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. I'm gonna go check it out.
Yeah.
Excellent. This has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Bruce. It's been lovely.
You've been listening to Thinking Outside the Bud with business coach Bruce Eckfeldt. To find a full list of podcast episodes, download the tools and worksheets, and access other great content, visit the website at thinkingoutsidethebud.com. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at thinkingoutsidethebud.com/newsletter.